Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's freaking gorgeous down here. Oh, yeah. And everybody, thanks to the Fukushima radiation, has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is Christina England. Christina, welcome to the program. Christina, are you there? Because we can't hear you.
Yes,
now we can. Ish? Yes. Yeah. We're going to have a bit of connectivity problems tonight. I can just feel it. So, Christina, you were doing something before with your computer where you put the microphone down or something, or you're a little bit closer to it. It seemed to clear it up quite significantly.
Yes, I'm nearer now.
Close. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, it barely hear you at all. Okay, AFR, can we connect her up on her cell phone, please? We probably should have done this before. Sorry about this, ladies and gentlemen. A little bit of technical difficulties. I assure you, it's my fault. once AFR connects her up on this cell phone, we've got a number there for you, Christina. I hope it's a... I hope it works. Okay. Well, you can still speak, can't you?
Yes, I can still speak, yes.
Yeah, we can barely hear you, but, you know, it's intelligible. So while we're waiting for that cell phone number to get hooked up, why don't you just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, I've just got
to the mic. I don't know if that helps.
Much better.
Right. Yes, my name's Christina England, and I'm an internet journalist. I have done some work on newspapers, but not much. I qualified about 4 years ago, and I came into it as a mother with two autistic sons that I adopted when they were 4 and 3. They're now 21 and 28, both autistic. And one of them is very, very definitely vaccine damaged. It was on his paperwork. And when I found this out, I began to look more into vaccine damage and the effects of vaccines. And I was shocked to what I found because I was like most mothers. I just believed that it was the right thing to do, that the governments were right, the doctors were right, and no one would ever be lying to us. And everything came of a bit of a shock. And since then, I vowed that when the children had grown up, I was going to become an internet journalist and expose everything and expose what I was learning. And I've learned an awful lot over the years.
Such as?
Such as that vaccines are very, very dangerous, that they're not all they're cracked up to be. I really came into it because I was falsely accused of Munchausen's by proxy. That's making up things to get attention, making up diseases and illnesses that the children had. In fact, I was accused of making up the very illnesses and disabilities they had before I ever met them, which is quite unique because most people get, you know, accused of making up something new, but I got made up, you know, what I got made, you know, accused of was making up the illnesses and disabilities that they had already before I even got hold of them. So this was various different things. I mean, my oldest son has mild cerebral palsy. My youngest one has got deafness. They've both got multiple disabilities. And I got accused of putting hearing aids on my youngest to make him look disabled because I liked to get the attention of him being disabled. He's got a lot wrong with him. I mean, but the other one I got accused of even putting a t-shirt on with a picture on because it made him look childish. He was 13 at the time. He's got quite severe learning difficulties and he'd just come back from Disney and he actually had chosen a t-shirt with Mickey Mouse on and I didn't even know. He'd put it in his PE kit because he wanted to show it off to his mates at school, and of course he wore it for PE without my knowledge, and I got accused of putting that in there to make him look disabled and more handicapped than he actually was. There was just one thing after another, and they made up one thing after another. And it was really because I was fighting to get their needs met, fighting for education, fighting because my eldest one had the stomach problems to go with the Asperger's, like Andrew Wakefield had mentioned. And I found that the vaccine, the MMR, that one he was damaged with, had a lot of toxins, it had poisons in it, and that it was damaging children worldwide. And although this came as a great shock to me, I had seen the rise of autism go up, to be honest, over the years, because I'd been working in schools for the disabled, and I had seen an awful rise in autism, but really couldn't put two and two together. And it wasn't until I met a lady called Lisa Blakemore-Brown, who was a psychologist, who was brought into my case to clear my name and to find out what was wrong with the boys. And I found her on the internet, and she happened to live down the road from me, which was quite handy for me. So I got to know her. And over the years, I mean, she got completely destroyed. She does a little bit now, but she's gone into another field altogether. It was around about the same time as Andrew Wakefield. And she was accused of being paranoid and making up things, and they twisted it on her. So what I'd been accused of, she actually ended up being sort of accused of herself. She'd got accused of being paranoid. She'd been saying that Professor Roy Meadow and Dr. David Southall were involved in vaccines, and that they were involved in the vaccine programs, and that they were, you know, making out the parents were sort of accusing parents of, you know, damaging their children to cover up the vaccine damage. I have since found this to be absolutely true, and she's spot on. And my next book is just about to come out with Dr. Lucia Tomajenovic, and we're both exposing the full truth of what's gone on behind the scenes in the government. We've both got government papers. They are freedom of information. Most of them are available on the internet, so we haven't got anything that anybody else couldn't get hold of.
I was thinking something about how it's fashionable and trendy to both have documents and be exposing some form of scumbaggery.
Yes, it seems to be very, very popular at the moment. A lot of people are doing it. I think the freedom of information has allowed us to learn a lot more that we probably would never have learned. And this is a good thing because we can expose the truth. We can expose what's going on. I mean, for instance, Professor Roy Meadow was actually involved in the government meetings censoring the vaccines, and he was actually speaking about the dangers and then going into court cases like Sally Clark and saying that the vaccines could not cause the disabilities, well, the death of her children. She'd lost two children directly after vaccines, one after 5 hours of having a vaccine. And both her children had died, and she got accused of murdering them and was locked up. And he actually said in court that the deaths of her children could not be caused by the vaccines. And he knew full well, because he was speaking in meetings about vaccines and cot deaths and how they could lead to cot deaths in the government JCVI meetings in Great Britain.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a great cover-up job. He was the one that actually made up the Munchausen's by proxy syndrome. He made it up. He made the sort of name up. Munchausen syndrome was around, but not Munchausen syndrome by proxy. So he was the one that made the actual name up, and he was saying that it was damaging, parents were damaging their children to get attention, and this was Munchausen syndrome, but by proxy. And, of course, he got very famous for his syndrome. He actually got knighted in the same year as David Southall, also received honours from the Queen. They both did the same year. And they were both involved in the vaccine scandals.
And what I've found is that although the evidence comes out that the vaccines cause autism in major courts and even in their own documents, people still deny that it happens. And one of the arguments that I've heard over and over again, and I'm sure you've heard this, we just have better recording mechanisms now. It's not that vaccines have caused autism to spike from like 1 in 30,000 to 1 in 8. No. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with just now we know what autism is and we recognize it, whereas 50 years ago, somebody who was unable to speak, who was severely disabled, we just didn't know what that was. Right.
Well, it got on vaccines are now causing autism. But there's been various different things. I mean, it was cold parenting at one time when Kanna brought out the original autism. He was the one that came out with the term autism. And, he blamed it onto cold parenting. So parents have been blamed all the way along. But, of course, since the vaccines have been found to be causing autism, they've been found, the studies have been hidden, the studies have been washed over, and they sort of play around with the figures and play around with the statistics to make the studies say what they want them to say. And of course, the more vaccines that have been brought into the schedule, and it's not just the MMR, it's all the other vaccines as well. The more vaccines that are being brought into the schedule, the more cases of autism we're seeing. And of course, the communities that aren't having the vaccines, say the Amish and the Mayor Einstein Clinic that don't vaccinate at all, those communities and those children do not have autism. I think there's, the odd case, but it's very, very rare. And the odd cases usually are if they've had a vaccine before coming into the community or before they were treated by Mayor Einstein. So, it stands up for itself. If you've got communities that are not vaccinated, that don't have autism, and communities that are vaccinated that have got autism, and the more vaccines that they're having, in the countries that got the highest rate of vaccination, say America, that's where the actual autism rates are the highest.
As opposed to the Amish community, where they don't have vaccinations, except the only autism that they found in the Amish communities apparently was one when the Amish community was downstream from like a mercury contamination in a river or something, and the other ones were children that were adopted into the Amish communities after having their vaccinations.
Yes, that's true. That's absolutely right.
How can you account for the disparity at the same time as pushing vaccines on people? You know, it's like, it's almost as if they're a psychotic scumbag pushing bioweapons on children. The greatest evil that one could ever conceive of is one that you hurt permanently young, innocent children.
That's true.
Something strikes me as satanic about that.
I believe that this is my own personal belief, and Dr. Rima's been speaking about it. Dr. Rima Elebo, MD, she's been speaking about it an awful lot recently, because I sort of brought it up with her in a casual conversation, really. I believe that the vaccines are, well, autism is a design model. I think they're trying to make children autistic, and they're trying to actually get a particular type of autism that is going to be useful to the governments, useful to the armies, and useful to the communities in general. We've got autistic children. Now, I've got one of them, so I know this, who like boundaries, who like routines. I mean, my youngest son has got an alarm clock that goes off. It drives me potty. Goes off every half an hour, all the waking hours. And that's to tell him to move on to the next thing to do. To you know, he'll even have, it's ridiculous, he even has an alarm to tell him when to go to the toilet, because he doesn't go unless that alarm goes off. It's a bizarre situation. Everything also is in routines. It's in, everything's lined up. Everything has got a place. If it's not in its place, he goes berserk. He goes mental if things aren't put back into the right place. If somebody's been into his room, made his bed, changed covers, anything like that, it really does upset him. Now, these type of autistic people are very, very useful because of the Brave New World that Aldous Huxley spoke of, and the sort of New World Order, where they have the three-tier system, sort of a hierarchy on the top, the sort of workers in the middle, and the technoids or the technologists at the bottom doing the mundane, routine jobs that are very repetitive, that they're not answering back. And these sort of autistics are very useful. Also, I have noticed a huge rise in great numbers of autistic people being employed by the global telecommunication companies.
Oh, Christina, we'll be right back after the break. Christina England, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christopher Green. Make sure to tune in to Greenwave Radio every Tuesday and Thursday from 3 to 5 p.m. Central on American Freedom Radio. Hard-hitting and in-your-face, America.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Christina England. And we want to talk about this vaccine phenomenon, and I believe it's part of some kind of really, really dark, nasty, evil agenda. I mean, nobody who purposely injures children to the point where they become disabled for life, nobody would do that and then cover it up who had a conscience. Ergo, the people at the top in the pharmaceutical world are quite likely psychopaths. That's my opinion. I could be wrong, but I don't see any evidence that I'm wrong. I only see evidence that I'm right, which makes it very scary indeed, because almost everybody thinks that they can trust doctors who just push pharmaceutical products on you. And that's really quite worrisome. Christina, welcome back.
Hello.
What do you make of that?
Well, as I was saying before the break, I believe it's a design model that these people are evil. They are possibly psychopaths. I can't say whether they are or not. I'm not a doctor, but it's my belief. Having looked at newspaper articles, and I've seen a lot recently, that saying that companies are actually going out, and these are IT companies, these are global companies, and most of these companies have connections to Bill Gates Foundation, Vodafone, for instance, SAP. These companies are employing great big groups of autistic workers. They're looking to have autistic workers, and they're looking for their mind. They're saying that, you know, these people have a good, great mathematical skills. They have great technology skills. They can tap into computers. They can hack systems. And they want to pick up on these skills. And these great big companies, I mean, one company is looking to, which is SAP, S-A-P, a big IT company, is looking at, I think it was either 1% or 10% of its workforce. But when you look at the numbers that are working for SAP, which are 65,000, that's an awful lot of workers. They're also, there's companies that are purely not employing anybody else but autistic workers. Now, why would any company want to employ a whole company full of autistic workers? I live around two autistic boys all day, and it's hard work. But these companies are training their top people to be able to communicate and work with these autistic workers to tap into their unique skills. And that is even more worrying, I feel, than and it does go tie in very much with the three-tier system that I was talking about, where they can use these people, use the autistic. I think maybe to begin with it might have been an accident of the vaccines, but they're using it to their advantage now. And I believe that they're just designing a particular type of autism. And of course, design models take a while to work out to get the exact design.
Designer autism.
Yes, designer autism. If you look at the Delta Project that Dr. Rima Lebo has actually gone into in great depth, she took hold of what I'd said because she'd been looking at the three-tier system, the triangle, and she'd been talking about it a lot. And it wasn't until I'd seen her video about this that I sort of put two and two together and started coming up with this sort of idea. And I went to her and I said, what if they were designing autism? What if they were designing, you know, children to become like this for a reason? And I explained what I'd seen. I explained the different newspaper articles. So I gave her about 10 articles that I'd found about what was happening in the IT world and who was involved and how it seemed to be linked back to the Gates Foundation. And I said, what if this is what they were doing? And she took it on board. And now if you go to the Dr. Rima Truth Reports into her website, you'll see the Delta Project, and she's had a huge following on it, and they've taken it up. She's actually called it the England Hypothesis. And if you look into the way she's put it over, which is probably a lot better than I'm putting it over now, you'll actually understand it a lot more. And the webinar was actually sabotaged, completely sabotaged as soon as we went on air. It just went completely. We had doctors from all over the world discussing this and discussing vaccines and autism and the dangers in vaccination. And the moment we went on air, we'd had lots of problems. Our sites have been hacked. My email account was hacked very badly twice in a row. All Dr. Rima's sites went down. They were all hacked. And we've had terrible trouble ever since. But we did manage to get the webinar done because we decided to actually record it all ourselves, and we've done it as an ebook and webinar, which you can actually pay for and get the whole information on all of this and all the newspaper articles. There's different PowerPoints by different professionals from all over the world. We've got Vera Schreibner, we had Dr. Paul King, various other top doctors from around the world were actually giving their views on vaccination and the actual Delta Project itself.
So let me get this straight.
we're going to wind up with a society where a good proportion of people are the Deltas off of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, who are very dull, very repetitious, and basically don't accomplish anything in their life except being told to shop because shopping makes you happy.
Yes, that's right, really. It's just, it's... On top of them,
there'll be a middle class sort of bunch of people who do sort of administration, technical skills and so on and so forth. They'll be a little bit more intelligent. And then above them, there will be the elite, the rulers.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
According to Dr. Rima, she was speaking to a patient of hers, and this is how she stumbled upon it. And the patient of hers, which was somebody very, very high up, somebody very elite, she has never mentioned who, obviously for patient confidentiality, had mentioned to her that they were depopulizing. It was a depopulization plan to get rid of the useless eaters. And when Dr. Rima said, well, who are the useless eaters? And she said, well, we are. They're going to drop down the population to 10% of what it is today. And this is where they're going to make the three-tier system.
And,
it's very difficult to believe. It's difficult to take on board.
No. It's not that difficult to believe. I mean, look, let's think about this. Whenever I tell somebody that they plan to exterminate a whole bunch of people, they're like, oh, how could they do that? How could they do that? You know, I don't know of any single method that could actually accomplish that. Well, did it occur to you that they're not going to use a single method? That they're going to use multiple methodologies?
Oh, yes, they're doing it.
That they're going to release... Yeah, that they're going to release bioweapons, that they're going to contaminate the place with radiation, that they're going to contaminate the food with cancer-causing compounds, that they're going to contaminate all the water supplies with carcinogens, you know, like fluoride and so on and so forth. Did you know that they're going to be doing this, that, and the other, and such, and blah, blah, blah? Do you have any idea how many ways you are being killed right now as you speak and as you sit in your little chair right now at this very moment? You're probably being killed by about 19 different things simultaneously, okay? And this is when they're being nice about it.
Absolutely. My friend's just written a brilliant book that's just about to be published called The Toxic World That We Live In. And she talks about makeup. She talks about the GM crops. She talks about vaccinations, the drugs, everything. Everything we use, you know, even when we're cleaning around the house, we're using cleaning fluids. All of these have got toxins that are seeping through our skin. You know, if we shower the water that we're using, that's obviously got all the chemicals and the fluoride in, and that's seeping through your skin, even if you're not drinking it, even if you're managing to get bottled water. And, of course, you know, we're all on terribly tight budgets. I'm probably on one of the tightest I know. And this week I haven't been able to have the bottled water, but I have been using bottled water. But you can't shower in the bottled water. You can't actually do things like, you know, cook all your vegetables in bottled water. It would cost you a fortune to do that. So, obviously, you are having the water, whether you like it or not. You are having toxic water. And that's just one of the methods. You know, foods, they're putting GM crops into the foods.
Look at all the sugar and yes. Things. Did you know that, like, McDonald's fries have, like, 17 ingredients?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, it's fried potato. How was there 17 ingredients in there, Brown?
It's unbelievable, but they do it to crisp the fries up, to make them look attractive. It's just...
You know what?
Everything
you know what?
I've seen the supermarkets are all done to look attractive. The colours aren't real. If you look at
hold on, and that occurs to me. That occurs to me, Christina. We're going through such lengths to make our food attractive that it reminds me of women putting on copious quantities of like 17 different types of makeup and fake boob
Puka Rapa thingies and all of this other stuff. And then when you get the girl home, she takes off her eyelashes, she takes off her fingernails, she takes off her boobs, she takes off her face, and then she accuses you of only wanting her for her body.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. It is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, whether you're using hairspray, even the shampoos, everything that we're using, soap, whatever soap we're using.
Except the Gourmet Soap Kitchen. We've got the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga. There's a banner on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, ladies and gentlemen. That's the soap I use. And she even sent me hair product because I was using this paraben-containing hair product and she didn't want me to get Alzheimer's or cancer or something.
Yes, my friend's sending me all the makeup and everything, bit by bit, you know, to be able to use the proper makeup. They're just samples that her site, she's got a site called Miss Eco Glam. And,
is that MissEcoGlam.com?
Yes, that's the one. Yes, she runs that. And this is the lady that's written The Toxic World, Our Toxic World. It's a brilliant book. I have actually endorsed it myself. I was one of the professionals she asked to endorse it. So it really is a wonderful, wonderful book.
I'd like to have her on the show if you could hook me up. That'd be awesome.
Yes, absolutely. I can definitely do that for you. She was on the Dr. Rima Truth Reports not so long ago. I managed to get her on there talking about her book, and I went on with her and was discussing the book.
Excellent. All right, we'll do that too. Now, furthermore, let's have a look. Okay, if you're trying to get rid of toxins from the environment that are fulfilling the New World Order agenda, you've got one hell of a task ahead of you, and it's not a task that only one person can do because it requires many different disciplines and levels of expertise in order to basically fight it, right? Like, you've got a whole world. And it's have you ever seen those balls of string or something with the two knitting needles stuck through them?
No, I haven't actually. Yes, I have.
It's a classic symbol of knitting. You know, you got your ball of yarn, two big knitting needles stuck right through it. Well, it's kind of like the Earth is like that, except instead of only two knitting needles jutting through it and skewering it, there's like about 7 billion, and at this point, it's really disheartening to a lot of people to even try and understand the reality of it because it's so stark, so scary, so bad that they can't even deal with it, right? Psychologically speaking, what if I told you today that everything you ever were brought up to believe that was good for you is in fact bad for you, and everything that you ever brought up to believe that was bad for you is actually good for you? Right? More or less, that's what we're talking about here. So that means if I inform somebody of that, their entire freaking perception of reality falls apart. It implodes like a dying star. And it's very difficult, once you realize that, to actually get back on track and maintain some kind of sanity or some kind of life after it without living in freaking denial.
Exactly. I think, you know, the moment you register a child, you're registering that child. The moment you register that birth, you're registering them over to the government. You're signing them over to the government. And people don't actually realize that this is happening. And we actually belong to the government. That's why they can do exactly what they want to do with us. Because, you know, our parents say, well, it's, you know, our children, it's our right. And it's very difficult to turn around to a parent and say, well, actually, it's not your right and they're not your children, because people wouldn't understand that. And if you go into all of what's going on and come on purpose and what is really happening, I mean, the education system's being dumbed down. They're being taught what they want them to learn. History, they're no longer, history is not taught in the same way as it used to be. And
it's hardly taught at all. Christina, we're coming to break. Christina England is my guest. Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Here we go, we're coming back.
It got no
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And also welcome back to my very special guest, Christina England. Christina, I used to look after autistic boys. What was interesting is that I was one of the very few males doing it. It is a overwhelmingly female-dominated caregiving sector, which is a shame because the boys in particular, and it was mostly boys that get the autism, girls not so much as I understand it, are just like any other boy that needs a strong male role models around them. And when I was with these boys, I managed to curb their behavior really significantly in very short periods of time, whereas previously other people didn't really care about them whatsoever. They're kind of viewed as this unsolvable puzzle that they would prefer to just keep sitting on a shelf like an old dusty Rubik's Cube, one that they know they can never figure out and they're never even going to bother. Whereas I started to figure it out. I started to teach them new words, how to speak, how to play ball, how to exercise, how to communicate, how to stop biting, spitting, and hitting, that kind of thing. I was doing that in really quick succession. And the unfortunate thing is, nobody cared. Like literally. It was like pounding my head against a brick wall, trying to show these parents of these children how to change their children's behavior, as I've been doing. And that, no. I don't want to look at no evidence. I don't want to look at any methodologies. I'm just going to say thank you for doing what you're doing, and as soon as you're gone, it's all over with, and they'll just revert back to normal, and that's how we like it. It's like having that child was a death sentence to a degree. Like they'd gotten used to it. They'd seen so many doctors, so many specialists, taking their money, trying to tell them how to accomplish this, that, or the other with their beautiful child, and being disappointed so repeatedly that anybody who ever comes up and tries to help you again is instantly dismissed as too traumatic to go through the disappointment again. And I felt that disappointment being in the position I was, and I couldn't keep doing it, so I had to leave. This is what people don't really understand. Now, this disease doesn't just affect the child, does it, Christina?
No, it doesn't. It was funny because I now say that God taught me to embrace autism. And the reason I say that is because I actually put on my adoption forms. I'd often worked with disabled children. I'd worked in schools. I'd worked in hospitals and a respite unit and various different places working with the disabled. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed working with the disabled. But I had put on by my adoption forms when I went to adopt children with special needs that I didn't want autism. And lo and behold, I ended up with two very severely autistic boys. They were classed as globally developmentally delayed. This is a catch-all phrase that seems to cover up that actually they've got autism. So if parents, adoptive parents out there that are going to adopt children, look out for that, because that is just a phrase they use to cover up disabilities. Another phrase they use is attachment disorders. They say the children will improve once they get boundaries, once they get love. An autistic child can improve, but not to the level that they put out that they'll improve, because attachment disorder and autism, whereas although they're similar in some places, and I've studied this, I've done psychology, they're not actually the same at all. They're very different. They've got some similarities, that's all I would say about it. However, over the years, I have I have become to actually love my autistic boys very, very much. I wouldn't part with them for the world, and I don't regret for 1 minute adopting them. They're the best thing that ever happened to me. Certainly the best thing I've ever done in my life. They're wonderful boys. They've got such a lot to give, and you can actually get in and you can understand them. My youngest has got a terribly wonderful sense of humour. He comes out, because he's so logical and so literal with everything he says, he takes everything literal, and it can be a very funny experience from time to time. You know, he just says the most weird things and you sort of look at him. For instance, we were walking past the church not so long ago, and he looked at me and he said, "Mum, will Father William marry me?" So I said, "Well, yes, I suppose he will when you get married." So he said, "Oh, that's a pity, Mum." He said, "I really had hoped I was going to marry a woman." And it was so funny at the time, because he had taken it literally that Father William would actually marry him. And this is how he is all the time. He does take everything literal. But he's a delight to be around. He's an absolute wonderful boy. He's a wonderful human being. And these autistic children, you can tap into them and you can understand them. If you're prepared to try and get on there, look at things from their perspective, because they haven't got the social cues. They haven't got the sort of empathy that I would say most human beings have, but they haven't really. But, you know, they haven't got empathy. They don't understand facial expressions. They don't understand body language and things like this. So the world can be a very confusing place. And I think if you try to understand things from the way they're looking at things, then you've got a much better chance of understanding and communicating with your autistic children, because they can be communicated with. I remember when I adopted Nikki, he had got contact with his birth mama. He'd had contact with her from the day one. And I specifically said that I wanted to keep up that contact. And she said, well, the social worker said, well, he won't notice, will he? He doesn't speak. He doesn't understand anything. So I said, just because he doesn't speak doesn't mean to say that he doesn't understand anything. I said, you're sort of taking it that he's completely disabled, a vegetable, can't do anything and can't understand anything. I said, I think, and also he was with a completely black, West African family, because there wasn't any foster homes that were available to take him. He is a white English boy. And I said, if you take him out of the situation that's been surrounded by all a black community, and you're putting him into a white community with a single mum and another white child, I said, surely that would be very confusing for him. She said, well, he won't notice, will he? And I said, I think he might find it that he will notice. And sure enough, obviously he did notice. But it's been a very, very difficult journey for us, but it's a journey that has been a very worthwhile and a very sort of embracing journey. It's been one that has taught me an awful lot about life, and it's been a great experience.
Now, I saw this poster up in one of the care centres that I was at called Celebrating Autism, and they have these days where you give out prizes and so on and so forth, and all the parents come in and they take their children, and I thought to myself, all right, let's celebrate disorders and diseases that are in large part unnatural, okay? I just thought about a great idea, celebrating giant tumours, celebrating lymphoma, celebrating spina bifida, celebrating cancer. You know what's happened here? Is that society's gotten so sick for so many reasons that somebody has figured out that they can make an industry off of that suffering. And they do. And they promote it. That's the thing. We're promoting disease, really. We're not promoting cures. We're not promoting effective therapies to alleviate symptoms. We're not promoting natural remedies. We're simply promoting the disease and the endless drugs that they dope the kids on.
Well, let's face it, the pharmaceutical companies would go bust if there wasn't any sick people. So if they're making sick people and then they can feed them with the drugs, I mean, and these pharmaceutical companies are very, very clever because they're actually tapping into all the different support groups. You've got the different drug companies supporting the ADHD groups, and they're the particular companies that are sort of plying them with the ADHD drugs like Ritalin and various other ones. I hear they've got a whole string of them now. Each company, if you look at the sort of pharmaceutical industries and you look at different support groups, like epilepsy support groups, you've got the support groups for diabetes, and each one has got some kind of funding from the pharmaceutical companies. But you've got to wonder why they're actually getting the funding at all, because obviously they want to fund them because they want to sort of encourage them to support their drugs. Certainly one ADHD group that I know in Great Britain, it had great funding from Eli Lilly. And Eli Lilly was funding...
Hold on a second. Let's leave that as a weak cliffhanger.
Who was Eli Lilly funding? We'll find out after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.